Okay, so we're never separated. I think Prabhupada felt it's simultaneous. That's a good point. Because Prabhupada felt, Prabhupada wrote a song, and in every line of the song he expressed his feeling of separation from his spiritual master. That his life was so difficult in separation. And at the same time, Prabhupada said, I've never felt alone. What is it? That's the AC? The problem with it is it comes out on the recordings. And if you're not very tolerant when you listen to the recording, you get upset. Because in the back of everything is a whistle. Anyway, for the benefit of those who are going to listen to the recording, all the devotees have agreed to suffer from the heat. So you don't have to hear this whistling. So Prabhupada said he was alone in New York, he never felt alone. So both things are going on. He's feeling that his spiritual master is with him. In his words, in his instructions, he's also feeling separation from the personal presence. Interesting, isn't it? I will tell you a story. I don't know if I told you this story last time. When Srila Prabhupada came to San Francisco in 1970, I was there. And not many devotees went to the airport. We greeted Prabhupada in the temple. And the temple was a storefront, and it was filled, completely packed. But it was all brahmacharis, because in 1970, 90% of the movement or more was brahmachari. So Prabhupada walked in, and he came to the front door, and he didn't walk in, he just stood there and he was looking. Did I tell this story before? And he was just looking at all the devotees and smiling, very effulgent, for about a minute. It was just an ocean of saffron dhotis and shaved heads, wall to wall. Then he walked in and he sat on his vyasasana. And then he chanted the Guru Vashtaka, prayers to his spiritual master. Which, to my knowledge, he had never done before, never done subsequently on arriving at a temple. And later, the devotees told us that when Prabhupada was stopping at the door looking, that he was so inspired by seeing all these new devotees. You know, shaved heads, saffron, temple room full of devotees, that he called his spiritual master to come and see. Which would be confirmed by the fact that he chanted prayers to his spiritual master. So he had that kind of relationship with his spiritual master. That he felt his presence so deeply through the service. But he also felt separation. The separation is felt in terms of the disciple feeling dependent on the guru. And almost feeling like, I can't go on without my guru. But I go on by his instructions. They're my life. So I feel him with me. So it's both things are going on simultaneously. Feeling of closeness and separation. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you may know, wrote a Vyas Puja offering all about the value of Prabhupada's personal association. You know that offering? Any one of you remember? Because Prabhupada and the Shastra always says that the instruction or the words of the Guru are what is important, more important than the personal association. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote an offering recognizing that point, and he said, but still, the personal association of Prabhupada had all these benefits. Didn't he? Did he list the benefits or how he was affected by Prabhupada's association? So he was showing that he was uniquely affected by Prabhupada where his words affected him differently. So naturally he'll feel separation when Prabhupada leaves, because what he got from Prabhupada's personal association was special. So there's this, both things going on. Feeling Prabhupada in his instruction. Whoa, you escaped the army. Are they after you? Are they coming after you now to get you?
No, don't worry.
They'll take me instead, right?
You don't know where I am.
If I become an Israeli citizen, then I have to go in the army, right? I'm too old. Good. I don't think I need to be a citizen, do I? My children, oh. They're going to go get them. Oh, but I'll leave them in America. They're going to get them in America? Oh, okay. So he was pointing out the uniqueness of personal association. So that exists simultaneously. And the other thing, which you said, is perfect. I never met him. How many people say, I wish I could have met Prabhupada? All the time. They tell me, oh, you're so fortunate you met Prabhupada. I wish I could have met Prabhupada. That's a natural feeling. I was just in South Africa in January, and I went to this devotee's home. She said, Prabhupada came to South Africa when I was like 20, and I didn't go see him. I thought, just another guru. So imagine how she feels. She could have seen Prabhupada and she didn't. So we can feel some separation from these great acharyas in the fact that we never got their association. But separation is good, because what happens in separation?
Hearts become fonder.
Separation makes the heart grow fonder, yeah. And then you want to experience, I never got their presence, but you want to experience, that. You want to see, can I associate, can I experience their presence, even though I never got it? You read their books, you follow their instructions, you think about them. Like I say, I chant and I feel like something close with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And there's something there. I feel that he's helping me in my chanting in some way. That there's some connection there. It's nice. When Prabhupada wrote the Nectar of Devotion, he told us, he said, by reading this book, you're personally associating with Rupa Goswami. So that's the power of the transcendental vibration, that you can experience an association and also gain an attachment for these persons. One time in the morning walk, Gurudas tells a story. He said he actually liked Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books better than Prabhupada's. So he lied to Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is my second favorite author. How could you tell your spiritual master someone was your favorite author other than him? Prabhupada said, your second favorite author? And Prabhupada said something like, if I could be just a particle of what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is, I would consider my life successful. So somehow he developed this attachment or attraction for hearing and reading. And of course, you know, we don't want to jump over our spiritual master. We don't want to read these other books before we've studied his books. Anyway, he expressed this to Prabhupada. So something was there. And of course, Prabhupada, in presenting us his books, he presents the commentaries of other acharyas. So we have this connection. And also when we hear about their pastimes, their leelas, they're so inspiring. You know, I think most of you know, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how many books did he write? 100 or so, something like that, you know? Around 100 books. He was a prolific writer. And when did he write those books? He had a full-time job. I'm trying to finish a one book, and I can't finish it. I'm trying to finish it for the last year. I haven't even worked on it in the last year. I haven't found the time to work on it. He wrote about 100 books, and he was a judge, a magistrate. They call him magistrate. So his activities are very inspirational for us when we hear them. We can become affectionately attached because of the inspiration we get. And when you get inspiration from great acharyas, you naturally become attached to them. You become indebted to them because they're helping you. So this way, you also feel some association and separation. You feel so much helped by this person, but you never met them. And I wish I could be with them. They were helping me so much. He was a grihastha, so he set the example that as grihasthas we can follow. When we see the example of renunciates, we can say, well, they're renunciates, they can do that. But you can't do that when you see the example of a grihastha. So he set such a good example. Do you know that he finished all his work faster than everyone else so he could leave early and do his bhajan? And preaching, did you know that? I think it took everyone to 5 or 6 o'clock. He finished at 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock, lunchtime, and then he went home.
And then he was doing his judge so fast.
Judgments in court.
So that the English people sent some people to inspect him.
To see if he was doing his job properly?
Yes, and they found that actually he's doing it perfectly.
The other thing that is so wonderful about these great acharyas is that you can go to the places they lived. Because it's said that wherever they have done bhajan, they still live there. And you can go there and feel their presence. I remember many years ago, I had gone to the, I guess it was Samadhi or Bhajan Kutir of Thakur Haridas. And chanting japa at the Bhajan Kutir of Thakur Haridas is very special. So another year I brought another devotee and I said, it's very special to chant japa here. So we sat down, we chanted like 25 rounds. We had to go somewhere. And I said, it's time to go. He said, I don't want to leave. I've never chanted japa like this. So it's not only that these great acharyas come to benefit the people that were on the planet, to purify the planet, but they remain in their places of bhajan. They actually live. Prabhupada said, I eternally live at the Radha Damodar temple, in his rooms. I eternally live in my rooms at the Radha Damodar temple. And as many of you know, maybe all of you know, Prabhupada would take darshan of Rupa Goswami and get inspiration. There are stories of devotees seeing these Goswamis, or one of them, I forget which story, walk out of their samadhis, actually see them. You know those stories? There's stories. I forget now, but there's some stories like that. The Goswamis were actually there, and this devotee saw or spoke to them. So, that's part of the mercy of the great acharyas. They live in their bhajan kutirs. And by Krishna's mercy, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's home and his samadhi, you can go. You can go into the rooms where he lived. And you can sit down and you can chant and read in those rooms. And I've heard also you can sleep in those rooms. You can stay there overnight. Somebody told me they stayed overnight. I don't know what the arrangement is. This is all special mercy. You like to do that? At least go there. when you see me in Mayapur, we can go one morning, Chandra runs there, just grab me. We go take a boat, cross the Jalangi and walk about a mile and we'll be at his house. You want to go? Bhaktivinoda Thakur also started the Namahata program. And he conceived of spreading Krishna consciousness outside of India. For us, it seems like, well, that's not a big deal, but in those times, it was a big deal. Because Indians thought Krishna consciousness is only for Indians. So this was, you know, he was called the pioneer. You think, well, maybe Prabhupada's the pioneer. He did it. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was considered the pioneer of the modern day Krishna consciousness movement. Now, one of the reasons he was the pioneer is because nobody took Krishna consciousness, the intellectuals didn't take Krishna consciousness seriously. Did you know that at his time? It was for sentimentalists or grandmothers. It wasn't an intellectual, you know, they didn't see bhakti as an intellectual movement. So that was one of his contributions, to present bhakti to the intellectuals, make it acceptable. So, you know, you have your set of problems in preaching in this country and obstacles. He had a huge obstacle. And the whole movement was considered non-intellectual. That's a big obstacle, isn't it? So he had to deal with that. And you know, being in India, so many wrong conceptions and ideas. So he had to deal with that. And so when you have an empowered acharya, they can make huge changes in society. And so he was able to do that. And then he did something very interesting, which may be difficult to understand. He did not appear in this world as a devotee. His earlier pastimes were the pastimes of someone who had no faith in Krishna consciousness, who did not follow all the practices of Krishna consciousness, did not follow all the regulative principles. Isn't that interesting? And in his lila, his pastime, there was a conversion. He actually converted to Krishna consciousness, apparently, externally. This is really important because he wanted to teach that ordinary people could become Krishna conscious. And if people saw him as an empowered acharya, then they would say, well, that's him, I can't do it. So he took the role of an ordinary person, showing that if you take to Krishna consciousness, you can elevate yourself. Because people don't believe that. It's one of the offenses to the holy name. You think, you hear all these glories of the holy name and how it can elevate you, and you don't believe it. You say, it won't work on me. I'm too fallen. Have you ever felt like that? Holy name is cool, but it doesn't work on me. Maybe it'll work on someone else. I'm too fallen. Sometimes there would be speculation about Srila Prabhupada's position. Who was he? Who is he? Is he a coward boy? Is he a gopi? All these things. Prabhupada would never say. You could never get that out of him. Nobody would even dare ask. Because he didn't, you knew that's not the way he taught, and you knew that was not an issue. And then Prabhupada, if he ever indicated anything, he would never indicate that's his situation. One time he said, I was a doctor in my last life. And so, you know, devotees have discussed this, not everybody believes that, and so forth, but the idea that somebody can come from a position of non-Krishna consciousness to Krishna consciousness is a very good example. And that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, example he was setting. His life externally appeared to be like anyone else's life in India. And then he appeared to convert and became a Vaishnava. To show that if you take to the process, you can become pure. Otherwise, you just say, well, it's him. He's liberated soul, he can do that. Right? Oh, Mahatma, you were probably Krishna conscious in the womb of your mother. You can do it. It's easy for you. But I am in a different situation. So we're always thinking like that. But some doubt. So they perform these leelas. So, okay, I can do it, you can do it. That kind of thing. So that's what he did. He read Chaitanya Charitamrita and he became convinced. And before that he was playing the part of an intellectual who doubted everything Indian. Because that was the common belief then. Everything English is good. Everything Indian is not. Indian is inferior. So he was right there within the mentality of the people. And he preached in that way, right to the mentality. Which is very important as preachers to understand the mentality of the people and deal with it. And that's what he did. Right? What else did he do? Who wants to tell me? Something that inspires you that he did. Yeah, he sent the first English book to the West in 1896. The year Prabhupada was born. So he is progressive, the pioneer. He looked over from his veranda and he saw a temple called the Adbhuta Mandir. You know what Adbhuta means? Tavakara kamala varenakam Adbhuta Shinham. Buddha means wonderful. He saw a vision of a temple rising. And then he wrote, one day, Americans, Russians, and what else? Chinese? Israelis? Well, I don't know. Israelis were not included. You'll be surprised that you became devotees. We'll be chanting and dancing together. So the Acharya can see the future. He predicted that. Someone will come. Spread Krishna consciousness around the world. He saw all these things. So we understand that Krishna has sent all these great Acharyas to develop the Krishna consciousness movement. Right? And we understand we are greatly fortunate because we are in the embryo of that expansion. You say, oh, I wish I was here when Prabhupada was here. Do you realize that 30, 40, 50 years from now, people are going to say to all you youngsters, you had the association of Prabhupada disciples? Oh, you're so fortunate. I wish I had that association. This movement's going for 10,000 years. We're just in the womb right now. We are all pioneers, not just the disciples of Prabhupada, we're all pioneers. And it's nice to think like that. It's a, you can see, as it has come through Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was reviving it. That was how he was known. He revived it. It was pretty much dead. He revived it. Bhaktisiddhanta then took the mission that he'd learned from his father all 64 months, and then Prabhupada took it around the world. It's just the beginning. So we're part of that history. So we're very connected with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, aren't we? We're fulfilling his mission. You know, one time, you may know this lecture, Prabhupada was speaking about book distribution, encouraging book distribution, and he would say how much his spiritual master wanted it. I was at this lecture, you probably heard this lecture. And he said, the grandfather is more merciful than the father. Have you heard that? So he said, so if you distribute books, because Bhaktisiddhanta wanted it, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, you'll get his blessings and you'll get my blessings. So he said, distribute books and be doubly blessed. That's what he said, right? As far as I remember, be doubly blessed. But also there's the blessings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I believe Prabhupada told Jayapataka Maharaj, if at the opening of the Mayapur temple you get the Queen of England and somebody else, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur will personally come and take you back to Godhead. Who was it? Queen of England and some? What? Queen of England, who else? Anybody remember? It's two people, right? Queen of England and somebody. Anyway, maybe one's good enough. Isn't that interesting? That Bhaktivinoda is so present within, because this is also his mission that he started. So he's so present, so aware, that he could come and take you back to Godhead for it. He told Tamakrishna Maharaj or Jayapataka Maharaj? Tamakrishna Maharaj. Oh yeah, right. But he left it for us. The devotee, Vishnu Janaswami, asked Prabhupada, what did Bhaktivinoda Thakur mean? I left my world, I left this world, my work unfinished. And Prabhupada said he left it for you to finish, by his mercy. He could have finished. He's Vaishnava, he's all powerful, he could do everything himself. He left it for us. So now we have to undergo so many austerities in spreading Krishna consciousness, right? But that's all the work he left for us, so that's mercy. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur even said that, you know, obstacles in Krishna consciousness are my great pleasure. I made my honor to take these obstacles in Krishna's service. He wrote like that. You know that? That's how he saw the difficulties, where his great honor and pleasure. So if it's true that he left this for us, then every difficulty we face, we should take it as Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mercy. That he left all these for us. Because Prabhupada would often say, well, you should be in anxiety for Krishna, because otherwise you'll be in anxiety about sense gratification. This one devotee wanted to buy this huge temple. It was very expensive. And Prabhupada said, too much anxiety if we buy this temple. It's too big, too expensive. So he didn't get it. And later on, Prabhupada said, so did you get the temple? And he said, no, it'll be too much anxiety. And then Prabhupada came back and said something like, unless we're in anxiety for Krishna, what's the point? Like he turned it around. That we have to be in anxiety. It's just being anxiety for Krishna. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given us all this service. He could have done it all. He could have spread Krishna consciousness himself. That's his mercy. So we take whatever struggles we have to undergo in spreading Krishna consciousness, we take it as mercy. One time, on a morning walk, a devotee told Prabhupada, he said, "Prabhupada, I'm preaching to the professors. It's so difficult to preach to them. They're so proud. They're so this or that." Prabhupada said, "I never said it would be easy." Or he said, "Whoever said it would be easy?" And it's the glory of the devotee that they undergo the difficulties to spread Krishna consciousness. It makes them more glorious. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta opposed so much opposition, the caste Brahmins tried to kill him. Right? He was their greatest enemy. He was exposing them. They tried to kill him. One of his disciples, because it was so dangerous on Purukkama, one of his disciples dressed up as him because the disciple looked like him. He said, "Better they kill me. They won't know who you are." Could you imagine that preaching in that atmosphere? It's pretty scary. So maybe we can take inspiration. So much opposition they had to face. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, so much opposition. Do you know that Mahatma Gandhi came to Bhaktisiddhanta? Because the most intelligent youth in India were becoming his disciples. And Mahatma Gandhi said, "You're getting the best people. Give them to us. You can have them later when the war is over." He actually asked him for them. So don't take these people. These are the people we need. Practically every time a brahmacharya would come, the parents would come to take him back. There's so many obstacles that they faced. It was never easy. The early days of the movement, the whole thing, brainwashing, cold, all over the newspapers. Then they had this Jonestown suicide, this cult killed himself. It destroyed our book distribution for years. As soon as we'd approach somebody, "Get out of here, cult." You know about this Jonestown? There was a religious group, and they lived in Guyana, which is an island in the north part of South America. And they created an ashram, sort of. And that's a Christian group. And they had one leader. And he, for some reason, he thought, I don't know what his thinking was, but he convinced them that there's no need to live anymore. And they all committed suicide. They all put poison and drank it. So it's this mass suicide. So this was a big thing at that time. So any movement that looked like a cult, people just didn't want anything to do with it. Because their concept of a cult was brainwash mass suicides. Huge obstacle for us in spreading Krishna consciousness for years. Devotees were kidnapped. My wife was kidnapped. The parents would arrange for them to be kidnapped. Her spiritual master was kidnapped. Any of you been kidnapped? The parents kidnapping and brainwashing the children. The idea was to reprogram the children, the brainwashed children. And they'd pay a lot of money. And they'd actually pick up the devotee and take the devotee away to some hotel and then just blaspheme Prabhupada and say, "This is a cult," and very heavy. So this is, you know, what we were going through to spread Krishna consciousness. So it's never easy. Anyway, we can take it as Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mercy that Krishna has given us challenges to face in spreading Krishna consciousness. And we can relish these challenges and obstacles because it's service. And we can get inspiration from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, does anybody want to say anything about Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Oh, the different side, yeah, he was, any empowered preacher, acharya, will expose anything which is bogus. So there are many bogus sampradayas. They're known as owls, bowels, sahajiyas, and he would expose them. They weren't too happy about that. And then there was, what was his name? Vishikshena? He was posing as God, right? He's posing as Balaram. I didn't know that. You sure? Anyway, he was posing as
Vishnu Tattva.
Vishnu Tattva. But what was his plan? To get other men's wives? And take them in the back room? Something like that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur came to expose him, and he had mystic power. By his mystic power, everyone in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family was deathly sick. And his wife told him and said, just don't go against him. No, I thought he said he was Mahavishnu, no? Anyways, something like that. Bhaktivinoda said, I don't care. And he opposed him. Even he was weak physically because this person had mystic power, and they won the case and he was put to jail. And someone, I believe it was in jail, came and grabbed him and cut all his hair, and he lost his mystic power and he just fell to the ground. And then shortly after, he committed suicide in jail, drank poison or something, didn't he? English doctor came, cut his hair, shaved him up, and all his mystic power was in his hair. And he fell down right there, right? And then he killed himself. So the point was that this person had power, and enough power that he could cause his family to be seriously ill. And he just continued, he didn't care. Because he was, he could not tolerate that this was going on. Everyone listening to this recording is thinking, what is that sound? You want me to tell you? Maybe I'll torture you and tell you. I won't tell you what it is. That is an electric metal stream over a patio window. Right? Something like that. Yes?
I'm thinking of two things. There's a quote, I don't remember where it's from, where it says that when I see men of other faith pray to God, I mean in a mosque, in a church, they're actually praying, I can see them praying to my God,
right.
God is one that was.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that he wrote the Sayyavi Vidijal prayer.
That's your favorite prayer? I would have never thought of presenting that in the class as one of his great contributions.
We have daily association.
Oh, that's true, yeah. We associate daily. That's the point. Okay, I get it. We associate daily with him, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by chanting that prayer. That's a good point. I never thought of that. Jai Radha Madhava,
so many songs of poetry.
Yeah, so many songs in common language, and so many songs about very high things in Krishna consciousness and very basic things. and a lot about surrender, and a lot of self-reflection songs. I'm lower than this, I've sinned. Remorse, songs of remorse, songs about self, being honest with oneself, admitting one's faults. Maybe more than any acharya, he was. That song, Gopinath, is just an admission of one's fault, his own faults. Any of you have any faults? Would you like to write a song and list them? Would that make you happy? Now, some people say these acharyas wrote songs taking the part of an ordinary person. But the question was asked to Prabhupada, and he said, no, they feel like them. I mean, you could say that that other side is there, but the main thing is they actually feel like that. What they're expressing is what they feel. They feel fallen. Because that's in a very elevated stage of bhakti. You feel that fallen. If you're not very elevated, you won't walk around saying, I'm really happy when people suffer. But somehow on this higher stage, you connect with that side of yourself. And you realize it's there. There's something about being elevated that you realize you're not elevated. Something about not being elevated that you think you're very elevated. It's an interesting phenomenon. But Prabhupada did say that. He said, no, they feel like that. They're not just saying it for us. They feel that way. That's their poems. That's their songs. That's what's in their heart. See if there's anyone out in Krishna.com land that has a question. But anyway, we can continue comments or questions. What's that? Breha, I'm back, don't worry. Vrishabhani was asking, they express these high realizations and what seems to be low realizations. Where, you know, I have no good qualities, I'm wicked. I'm... When you become that Krishna conscious, you'll understand. It's very difficult to understand. I mean, we can try to understand. But you see like these Krishnadas Kaviraj, the things he says about himself. Which are quite interesting, because his name's Krishnadas Kaviraj, and he says, if anybody says my name, they become, what, sinful? Like, if anybody thinks of me, they'll become sinful. He's actually feeling like that. But I think it's only because of the elevated realization of Krishna that they could feel that way. It's hard to understand because, you know, we're going to look at it so much from our perspective. It doesn't make sense. Prabhupada, listen to this. This will blow your mind. You ready to have your minds blown? You know where blow your mind came from? You know where that statement came from? That's what happened to people who took LSD. They blew their minds, and their minds never blew back. They were destroying their minds. There's a lot of hippie words in ISKCON. freak out, blow your mind, space out. That's all hippie stuff. That's all from what happens when you take drugs. You freak out, you space out, and you blow your mind. So, you know, you come along 20, 30 years later, and you're like, oh, I freaked out today. This will blow your mind. I've been spacing out. You have no idea where it came from. Anyway. What did I just say? I'm spacing out. About Prabhupada, yes. So, the devotees were saying, Prabhupada, something like Prabhupada, we want to go back to Godhead with you. And Prabhupada said, no, I'm not going back to Godhead. I'm not a devotee. You're going back to Godhead. You're a devotee. He says, how do you understand that? He wasn't saying that as an example. This is how he feels. He says, I'm not a devotee. I'm not going back to Godhead. You're going back to God. You're a devotee. This is how he's seeing. Not artificial. It's not made up. It's just how he's seeing. How do we understand that? No, I'm going to hell. You're going back to God. There's something like, the conversation was something like about going back to Godhead and the assumption that Prabhupada's going back to Godhead. Something like, you know, we'll go to hell to preach. But anyway, I forget the context, but anyway, that was the point. And Prabhupada was saying, I'm not going, you're going. You're devotees, I'm not devotees. I'm not a devotee, I'm not going. That's how they feel. My understanding is, or at least in my experience is, that the more you advance in something, the less you feel you have it. So there's something about getting love of God that you hit that point, you feel you don't have it. You hit a point, you just feel like, I don't have it. Even Lord Chaitanya, you know, when Lord Chaitanya is saying, I'm living, I should have killed myself. I'm feeding my body, I'm maintaining it, and I have no love for Krishna, and I'm maintaining my body. Isn't that sinful? I'm maintaining my existence in this world with no love for Krishna. That's sinful. You think like that ever? So there's something about love of Krishna that brings on that emotion. The feeling I don't have it. It's kind of like a separation. It increases the love. I don't have it, I want it. Maybe it's just transcendentally inspired by Krishna to increase the rasa, increase the desire. We hear the Bhaktisiddhanta addressed all his devotees, Dasosmi, I'm your servant. Never thought he was superior. Gorkhashore Das Babaji didn't think he was qualified to initiate. And we're these little neophytes and we get so proud. Hey, I led a nice kirtan. I'm pretty cool. You know, that's where we come from. Right? We do something. Krishna empowers us. He gives us the ability. And we want to identify with it. Hey, look what I did. Right? Totally Krishna's mercy that we could do it. And we want to identify with it. There's a whole series of conversations like that with Prabhupada where he's showing his humility. It's mind-boggling, the things he says. What did Prabhupada say? He said, I have no hope for going back to Godhead in the coming lifetimes. You know that? That speech Prabhupada gave? Vyasa Puja to his guru, I have no hope for going back to Godhead in the coming lifetimes. I just want to be a servant of my guru. That's how the advanced devotee thinks. Right? And that's how we know we're making advancement, when we think we're not. Of course, the natural question is, how will I know if I'm making advancement if when I make advancement I'm supposed to think I'm not making advancement? How will I monitor it? So there has to be some objectivity to know what advancement is and what it isn't, and not be artificially humble. So you can have an idea if or not you're advancing properly, but there's another side where as you advance, you will not think you're advancing. Did I tell the story to you about the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta who said, we've been chanting 20 years and we're not making advancement? Did I ever tell you that story? You know what he said? What do you think he said? Guru Maharaj, we've been chanting for 20 years, we're not making any advancement. What do you think he said? What?
Now I know you did the advancement.
Now I know you're...
Advanced.
Yeah. He said, very good. Guru Maharaj, we haven't made any advancement in 20 years. Very good. Guru Maharaj, why? Why did you say that? He said, because if you came to me and said, we've been chanting for 20 years and we're making a lot of advancement, I would be concerned that you're becoming proud. But the fact that you said you're not making any advancement shows me that you're becoming humble. And that's why I said, very good. So you got the answer right? Let's give him a big hand. See, being in the military pays off, after all. You get a realization. Yes.
In other China, not the same time in the spiritual world and the general world.
Are they acharyas? Do they have forms? In the material and spiritual.
At the same time.
While Prabhupada's here, he has a form. Some might, if they're Vishnu Tattva, yes, or some, but I don't think Prabhupada, no, because at least we know, yeah, okay, yeah, they do, because they have Manjari forms, yeah, so that's true, yes. Not all have Manjari forms, but they do have their forms, yes.
Is it the...
Actually, one devotee had a dream, that Bhaktisiddhanta was a specific Manjari. Had a dream. Can you imagine what kind of devotee that is? And he asked Bhaktisiddhanta, is that true? And Bhaktisiddhanta said yes. But Prabhupada didn't go there. He didn't entertain that at all, who he was. And you couldn't ask. I mean, you could, but I wouldn't if I were you. It's the wrong question to ask. So, you were going to say something?
I was going to ask, is Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in their form, is there?
In their form in this world?
Yeah, but in other places when they preach in the...
Oh, in other universes?
Yeah,
Are they preaching in other universes?
Like Rupa Goswami has this kind of form as an acharya, but
yeah. It's quite possible. Some devotees believe that Prabhupada has gone to another universe to preach, and they're praying to take birth in Haight-Ashbury, in the Lower East Side of New York, so they can be the first devotees to be with Prabhupada. You know, the thing is, and sometimes devotees would ask Prabhupada questions about the universe. And Prabhupada would say, you can't, and he might give an answer that seems difficult to accept, or he might just say, you can't understand, you have a tiny perspective. So these things may sound somewhat far out, but our experience is very minimal, very, we have a small, we're looking at the universe from a very small, tiny perspective, so all these things are possible. We can't say exactly yes. Some devotees believe that that's Prabhupada's mission, that he'll go and do this leela in other places. Of course, Krishna could send someone else. I mean, every planet is different. Bhakti Shri Swami had a dream. And in the dream, Prabhupada told him that on other planets, Krishna consciousness is spread like this. But on this planet, it's a little more difficult because on this planet, people like to fight a lot. That was his dream. He said, on other planets, they don't fight so much. You heard that dream? Yeah. I don't know if Prabhupada was telling him, or maybe, but he, that was the essence. He said, it'll happen. He was asking him, will ISKCON succeed? And Prabhupada said, yes, it'll take longer because people on this planet like to fight a lot. They fight more than other planets. Something like that. Have you noticed that? People like to fight on this planet? Yeah. I was in a country, they loved to fight. There was, it was so boring in that country. There was nothing to do, so fighting was exciting. And if they didn't fight, they'd just like die of boredom. That was my analysis. All the politicians are out there yelling and screaming at everybody. And it was like a sporting event. It was exciting, you know. They'd roll into town on their trucks, the big crowds, you know. They'd get on the stage and they'd scream and yell and put all the other parties down. And I'd think, this is the most exciting thing going on in this dull country, this little island in the middle of nowhere. Fighting's exciting, right? Get all fired up. So, it's time to end. We got the pranams from the leader. Unless his wife wants to fight him. Okay. Unless you have a burning question to ask or a burning comment to make.
I want to ask if we should think if we are advanced or
if we should think we're advanced or think we're not advanced or. Be aware that we're making advancement. Have some. So the question: should we consider the question? Are we advanced? What's the question?
Yes, should we deal with it? Should we think about it? Should we be concerned about
it? Am I advanced? Very good question. I think we should be, but I think it should be. Looked at in a more objective way. Because there's a dichotomy. How can, if I think I'm advanced, I'm not advanced. Right? But there's some, whoops, I think they're calling me. Let me look, let's see. Computer's freaking out. Oh, yeah, they're asking questions. That sound in the background. All right, she's asking a similar question. No. Maybe this will answer your question. You said it froze. Oh, it froze up. I had to stop it and start it again. So, this question, I thought about this question when I was preparing my course on humility. Because I always felt that you need to objectively be able to monitor if you're making advancement. You have to know. But then it would seem contradictory. Oh, well, I'm doing this, I'm making advancement. So my conclusion was it just has to be a very detached way. Not that I'm becoming proud, but that I'm noticing, well, like Prabhupada would say, how do you know if you're making advancement? He'd say, well, you're becoming detached. So he'd give you some indication. So like I should know if I'm going somewhere, there's a map there, and I should have some sign that I'm going there. So what's the sign? So it'd give you some sign, like you're becoming detached, I'm getting some attraction for service, taste for Krishna consciousness. There's a mood of service. I like serving the devotees like that. I'm not fault-finding, I'm not envious. These are signs you can look at, and you need to look at them. You need to understand in yourself. Don't you? I think you do. But you need to look at it in a way where you don't become proud of the fact. You say, oh, I'm becoming advanced because I can see the signs of health. But I have to tell them. They think it's over. I have to tell them I'm coming back. Hold on. I think I'm coming back. I'll try to come back. Let's see. So you're making advancement. You objectively see that you're doing it. But you're not proud of it. You're like, you can feel good about it, you can feel proud of the process works. I'm proud of my spiritual master, the mercy, you know, okay, I'm making advancement, it's his mercy. He told me to do this, I'm doing it, it's his mercy. So you kind of see it that way. But if you don't know you're making advancement, you should, like Prabhupada would say, you should know. Prabhupada would sometimes say, you should see that good qualities are developing you. Oh, Prabhu, all the good qualities are developing in me. But if you sense in your own heart and life a little bit more detachment than you had in the past from the desire to be honored, the desire to be recognized, then you can just pat yourself on the back and say, I think the process is working, it's good. And then don't become proud of your humility. Which, of course, is a huge paradox. It's a fine line. Because, you know how Prabhupada says, the pauper becomes proud of his penny. You'll find that it's so easy to become proud, isn't it? It's easy to become proud. You don't need much to be proud of. Now, there's another question here, which I'm probably some of you are thinking. And this devotee named Roma, all the way from England, is asking, can being too humble destabilize our confidence to advance? Would that not be low self-esteem? Because you may be humble in the sense that you're confident you won't advance on your own accord, technically speaking, but you have full confidence that even though you're fallen, you have faith in Krishna's mercy. Can you be too humble? Yeah, you can be. She's asking, can you be too humble? You can be too humble. In other words, you're acting more humble than you are. That's too humble. Right, Bo Prabhu? I'm the most fallen. Don't touch me, Hare Krishna. Yeah, so you're acting too humble. Now, Burijan Prabhu said that low self-esteem is not humility. He said it's just selfishness, because you're thinking about yourself. I'm so this, I'm so that. You're absorbed in yourself. But humility is, it's a dependence on Krishna. Krishna, I'm fallen, I'm low. Humility connects you to Krishna, and low self-esteem connects you to your selfishness. So they're quite different. And like she says here, in humility you can become more confident of Krishna's mercy. You're more dependent. I mean, that's one of the definitions of humility. You're more dependent on Krishna. You see, in India, if someone's successful, you'll say, oh, you're successful, and they'll go, Bhagavan. That's how they'll respond. They'll go, Bhagavan. In America, you say you're successful, and you go, yeah, this is what I did. I worked hard, I studied, I tolerated the difficulties, and I'm successful. That's the difference. So you can be successful as long as you say, Bhagavan. Then you can remain humble, because you realize where the success came. But if you identify with the success, yeah, it's me, that's a problem. In the world of self-help, that they teach you to help yourself and uplift yourself. And so there's a fine line between what's your effort and what's Krishna's mercy. And in the world of self-help, they tend to push you towards you doing it, because it's not religiously based, spiritually based. You do it. It's all you. And we know it's not all us. We know it's some of us. We don't sit around and do nothing, but it's Krishna also. Can't do it without Krishna, but you have to do something before Krishna's going to help you. It's not going to help you if you don't do anything. So Krishna helps you, and then you become proud. Look what I did. No. Right? Prabhupada did not like devotees being proud. Just didn't like it. He knew it was destructive to our society and to our own spiritual lives. One time there was an article in BTG, which was a conversation Prabhupada was having, and they said, he was speaking to his leaders, and he was saying so many things, then he said something to the effect, I beg you, please, don't become puffed up. So it's very important. Somebody sent me a saying, the first person to apologize is the bravest. The first person to forgive is the strongest, and the first person to forget is the happiest. That's not easy, right? But there are benefits. And one of the things we teach in our forgiveness workshop is that if you have an issue with somebody, ultimately it's not about your relationship with them, it's about your relationship with Krishna, because your relationship with them will affect your relationship with Krishna. So if you can be humble with them, you can be humble with others and humble with Krishna. So it's nice to see it that way, you know. See, the problem with my unforgiveness is not about the person, it's about me, and that is the wrong attitude to have, and that will affect my relationship with Krishna. So that's why Prabhupada wanted us to be humble. Okay. Thank you. If you have anything else, you can talk to me after, but if I don't officially end, then Gunavatar may not forgive me.
That will affect my relationship with Krishna.
Yes.